103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Mental Wealth with Brian Green. On today's programme, I'm joined by Senator Lynn Ruane of Shannadarran. Hiya, Lynn.
How you doing?
You're how long now in Shannadarran?
Well, I think it was last week or the week before. It was the 2-year anniversary of being elected. And then I suppose we were a couple of more months before we actually stood in the chamber with the whole forming of the government. So it's 2 months since election.
You weren't an accidental candidate because you definitely ran a campaign and wanted to get in, but nobody would have maybe thought you would have taken the third seat there.
No, I suppose I was accidental in a sense. I ran to win, but I was also very aware of the statistics and the fact that, you know, I think Mary Robinson was the only other person to get in on her first run at it. And David Norris was the last person to unseat an incumbent. So, I mean, we were very aware historically of how it went. So we definitely wanted to use the campaign as a way to raise awareness of issues and to kind of put things on the agenda. But we definitely didn't think that we would take the third seat.
How does it work? Because you run against the TCD people, but then you get in, do you all work together?
Well, yeah, we do all work together. I mean, there's a lot of crossover on the things that we care about, not only with the three Trinity senators, but right across the political parties, and independents in the Shannon would come together on particular issues and work together on things very positively. And then obviously we have our scraps as well on other things that we would be opposing to each other on. Yeah.
This being the Mental Wealth programme, I obviously followed the work of Joan Freeman, and I've had Maura Devine on the programme before, and I've been waiting to get you onto the programme to talk about things you're interested in. I know you're very interested in repeal and stuff, but we can't talk about that today because of broadcasting restrictions. But on mental health, you have a track record.
Well, I do, I suppose, at a community level and some of the looking at access to mental health services at a community level. I suppose many years ago when we removed people from asylums, the whole aim was to be able to integrate good care within the community sector and stuff, and I don't believe that happened. I believe in some cases their streets became the asylums, and a lot of people became homeless, and a lot of people became, you know, they were on the fringes of society. So I'm very passionate about trying to find ways to bring community care right down to a community level. I think there's a lot of great organisations out there, but sometimes they open their doors and people don't just automatically use a service. There has to be rapport built, there has to be relationships built, there has to be, especially with young men and young women, there has to be a good deal of time spent nearly working on the streets with young people before they feel a level of trust in your service to be able to enter it. So I really would, I think, I suppose I'm doing a million things, but I think if I had enough time on any one given thing within mental health, it would definitely be to further integrate the current services within some of the most deprived areas. And then also the other area which I'd be quite passionate about is the area of dual diagnosis and ensuring people with addictions and people with mental health issues have a dual care plan, and they're not kind of sent from A to B and back again and kind of ending up then falling through the cracks because nobody is developing a holistic care plan for all their needs.
Vision for Change was brought in, and some of it happened, and some of that was closing down the large Grange Gorman and St. Edith's and getting the numbers down in the asylums, as you said. Another part of it was to put primary care at the centre of access, and primary care is your GP. How have they done on that score?
Well, I can't really, I suppose, I don't know enough on how it's happening across the board in every community, but I did come across a couple of GPs in the Tallaght community, in the area of Tallaght, Tallaght Cross, and I went to a seminar that they had on, and they're doing a thing called social prescribing. So when an individual comes into their GP room, they look at the social setting they're in, their environment. They look at the needs they might have. Do they have family? Are they lonely? Are they on their own? Do they have hobbies? So they kind of look holistically at the person instead of just looking at the medical health of a person. And with that, then they've been building up connections all around Tallaght with different services, and they link some older people in with different old folks groups or gardening clubs, or, you know, so they've been making a real effort to expand this idea of social prescribing. And I think it's a great model, and I think it's something that should be looked at because it connects all the services together then as well, the GPs, the mental health your general just, you know, community groups and family resource centres, and everyone becomes aware of each other then, and then everyone's working together instead of everyone working in isolated silos away from each other and the person not really getting the care they need.
It sounds like the single GP is kind of providing a multidisciplinary approach where they are one person, but they're looking at the occupational therapy, they're looking at the social work needs of the person in front of them.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They've actually hired, say, hired someone part-time as well, or full-time, I'm not sure, to kind of coordinate and do them outreach pieces to find out what actually is out there in the community of Tala, because you have 100,000 people in Tala, so it's a big area to cover with a lot of doctors and a lot of people involved. So, yeah, like, I mean, I think I'll go back to them really to look at that model and maybe, you know, start really encouraging other communities. If some of them probably already are, but doing it in a much more formalised way that it becomes part of the practice.
And that's the structural level where it's happening in practices and it's then linking up with hospitals, etc. But as a senator, I don't know if you get casework like a TD, but do you have people come to your office with their problems, and does it kind of indicate that there is a safety net that's not catching everybody?
Well, there isn't. Yeah, there, not everybody is being caught by services. And there's a number of reasons for that, I think. But I don't run clinics. I kind of try and keep myself more at a national level in terms of legislation rather than working with particular... But I do get people that reach out, especially in my own community, because they can feel they access me because they know me, I suppose. And, I mean, we would have... had, I can't remember the figure right now off the top of my head, but we've had an unbelievable amount of suicides in the last 5 years, a real trend of cluster suicides, and a lot more women, which wouldn't have ordinarily been the case. It would have been a lot more young men, but there's a lot of women, not only young women, but women in their 30s rearing kids, you know, taking their own lives in their homes. I mean to think, you know, when you look at Tally, you think there's so many services and so many supports, but there's something definitely missing in being able to catch those people. Are those people feeling like they're connected to their own community? And it's only after someone dies or takes their own life or experiences severe mental health issues do families say, I wasn't aware that services existed, and that a service could be a 5-10 minute walk away. So there's something wrong if the people in your community from which you serve don't actually know you exist. And it's like, well, I believe that outreach, and that's something that's not done anymore. Like, years ago when we were setting up drug services, it was all outreach led for a good year, and you continue to do nightly outreach into the community, so you become part of the community. You don't just open your doors and expect people to come into you. You go to them, you go to where they are, you become known, and you become a face on the streets of the communities. And I think that will help catch some people that you wouldn't ordinarily catch by just having the service there and opening it and expecting people to come to you.
You mentioned dual diagnosis and addictions, and where addictions meets mental health, it invariably kind of leads to homelessness situations or to expanding the homelessness problem. That's on top of a massive homelessness problem that is in this country right now, with the way that the banks are selling up properties, the way that rents are going through the roof percentage-wise, quarter on quarter. Is there any sign on the horizon that any of this is going to get any better soon?
I don't want to be cynical. I'd much prefer to hold out hope, but it is hard to see. It is hard to see. When the numbers keep rising, it's hard to be positive. But I think if we all feel defeated, you know, where does that leave us? Does it mean that we stop fighting for this? Does it mean that we give up because we think it's an impossible task? And I don't think that's acceptable to the people of Ireland, for us to just accept that this is going nowhere or this can't be fixed. The people that with mental health and addiction that end up homeless, they've been homeless for a long, long time. They've existed before the current wave of homelessness. And, you know, there's a lot of long-term homeless people that live in the homeless sector. And I suppose nobody's kind of paying attention too much to them at the minute, and they've always been there. And there's people with severe mental health and health needs, physical health needs, disabilities, you know, Huntington's disease, people having triple bypass surgery, and a week later getting discharged into a hostel, like a low threshold hostel, where people are got severe alcohol problems. So you have someone recovering from surgery, like heart surgery, going back into that setting. So, you know, the system is overcrowded, but there is a problem with long-term homeless people not receiving the care that they need. And if you look at the relative age in terms of, you know, when we expect people to die, we think that 70 and 75 is young now or something for the national population, but the homeless population age at a different rate. So you're looking at life expectancy being like 45 or 50, I can't think of the exact number, but when they're in long-term accommodation and expect to probably live out their days in them hostels, they're not receiving the same nursing home care that the national population is when they're aging. So, you know, that obviously has a massive impact on a person's dignity and mental health. And I think, you know, we need to, as well as building massive amount of social housing and getting families and women and children out of hotels, we also need to pay attention to the fact that there's an aging population of homeless people that have been homeless 10, 20, 30 years that are dying in unsuitable accommodation. And the people in them hostels are doing their best and they're trying to provide the care that they need, but they definitely need a lot more health supports than they're currently receiving.
The professionals in this area talk about a crisis and a crisis and a crisis. Is it time somebody reclassified it as a national emergency and put a plan in place to match a national emergency to fix this problem once and for all?
It is a national emergency, and it should be. It should be given the status of a national emergency. I've said this numerous times. I don't know why they haven't. I think sometimes our government, and it can be very neoliberal in its approach, and, you know, I think sometimes it's afraid of upsetting a market, you know, and it's too attached to the private rental market, and it's too attached to landlords and too attached to property developers. And I think a national emergency has the potential to strip all that away and give it the attention that it needs. But for some reason, I don't see that happening.
Is there any work on the floor of the house that you're involved in that's moving through at the moment that you see is going to kind of break down some barriers and make some change?
In any area?
Yeah, like with Senator Freeman's bill that's going through, do you think that there's going to be recognition and change off the back of these bills?
I think so. I think the Shannon has been very productive in the last 2 years, the way the numbers are made up. We obviously don't know how long we're going to last, and that might stall a lot of them bills. So there's a lot of bills that need to be kind of really brought through the houses quickly, important bills like Senator Freeman's, also like Maura Devine's, who just put hers forward in terms of age of consent for mental health being brought down to 16, like to match with if someone presents for physical health issues. And then there's a lot of stuff obviously around the domestic violence bill passing, the adoption bill, you know. The data protection bill is a huge one as well in terms of the protection of children's data and so on. So there's a lot of important stuff happening, but that can all just come to a head if the government falls. And things can move slowly sometimes, and politicians get in the way sometimes. And we have the ability to move things quicker through the houses if the departments were, you know, much more swift in turning around the amendments and communicating with the two houses. And, you know, I think we could do things quick. I mean, some days on Thursdays we're doing nothing but statements upon statements in the Shannon. Like, and of course statements are important for raising awareness and education and to get your voice heard on particular issues, but statements don't produce legislation and change, you know. So I think we should be doing more legislation and maybe less statements in the Shannon.
What has surprised you most about this new job, like that you weren't expecting and that you like about the new job?
I think I like, there's different things that I like. I like seeing amendments passed from opposition. I think they gender-proof legislation and equality-proof legislation when you have a diversity of voices in a room. So I've liked seeing how diversity has improved the legislation. What I don't like is that I know that that can change if a government was given full power within the Shannon. So if the next election comes around and Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael have a majority, the diversity of voices may still exist, but they'll be less capable of actually changing the legislation. So I have liked seeing diversity at play and seeing the numbers of senators working together to get important things across the line. But there's a lot of things, I suppose, I don't like as well. Like, I suppose I love having a voice and a platform, and I love being able to share things. But there's so much that I don't like as well, in the sense of just as a person, I miss working with people at a kind of frontline way. I miss all the homeless people and the men that I worked with in the homeless sector. I miss working in the addiction sector. I miss helping people improve their lives on that individual way. And I have to keep trying to remind myself that hopefully I can create something that is, you know, serves a whole community of people in addiction or homeless, instead of just working with individual people. But I miss people.
I'm not saying that you're leaving the Shannage anytime soon, but what's next? Have you got any, you've done the college thing. Is there anything in your mind now having done that, that you'd like to go on and do?
Yeah, there's loads I would like to do. I would love to do a master's in either law or human rights. So I don't know whether college is finished for me. The Shannage, I suppose, I think I will run again for the Shannage. Hopefully I'll get in. The Dáil is definitely not something that's in my head at the minute. But I will only stay in the job as long as I'm being effective. And if I'm not being effective, and the numbers are against us and we're not getting stuff done, I will definitely try and move to maybe a more policy area and try and work on policy within the sectors that I care about in relation to social justice and stuff. I don't know exactly what that looks like now. I'd also love to write philosophy books for children. So that's an old thought in my head, but that might not happen until I retire someday.
If you ever slow down, is slowing down something you can do? Do you give yourself that space at weekends? Do you have marked out family time?
I do. I've got better at it. I used to be atrocious at it, even working in the drug sector. I try and keep Fridays free, just to answer some emails when the kids are whatever in school. But I try and be home on a Friday to make dinner. I try and make breakfast on a Monday morning, you know, small little things like that. I try and go away the odd weekend with my kids, and I try and I have to work out at 7 a.m. I go to gym at 7 a.m. before I start work, or else I wouldn't fit it in anywhere. But I am getting better, definitely getting better at making time for myself. A few Netflix series is running there as well.
Listen, it's wonderful catching up with you, and it sounds like you have done lots and you have more to do. Lynn Rand, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, thank you.
Recorded in the Portmarnock Hotel and Golf Links. Do you know how hard it is to catch up with Lynn Rand? She is that busy. It has taken me almost a year to get her on the programme, and it's not because she didn't want to make herself available. Great to catch up with her. It's Mental Health Week in the UK. Now, Mental Health Week's normally kind of around the 10th of October every year in this part of the world and in many other parts of the world. But in the UK, they are focusing on Mental Health Week right now, and it's all this week, focusing on stress. I caught up at one of their great organisations that's involved in mental health in the London area on the phone during the week. Joining me on the line is Vanessa Boachi of Inside Out. They are an amazing sounding organisation in the UK who are doing some great social enterprise work. Vanessa, tell me more about Inside Out.
Yes, Inside Out is a social enterprise, and what we do is provide mental health education for young people through creativity. So we use different means such as performing arts, so drama, music, art, dance, all to educate people about mental health.
It's Mental Health Week, the 14th to the 20th in the UK.
Yes, that's correct.
And you've got some events on. Tell us about them.
Yes, so Mental Health Awareness Week, the theme for it is stress. And what we're going to be doing is using different creative means to tackle stress. So our focus is on yoga, music and dance, because research tells us that these are great ways of treating stress and eliminating stress. And it's also a good way of communicating important messages for, especially because we're targeting young people, we want to package the psychoeducation in a creative way.
And so, yoga and dance and music is a great way to get young people, because they want to be involved in activities.
Exactly, yeah. So with yoga as well, there's lots of lots of different benefits of, you know, yoga on stress management. And what we want to try and do is introduce people to it, because people, young people anyway, they are sometimes aware of the benefits of yoga, but it's actually just getting them to join in and getting them to practice and telling them the benefits of it, educating them about the effects on the body, the effects on the mind. So we want to channel the psychoeducation in a way that's, you know, effective for them to understand.
What city are you operating in at the moment?
In London.
And people can travel in and take part, but is it you've got a kind of a core of people around your organisation that'll be taking part?
Yeah, so there are a few organisations and companies who will be joining us. So, for instance, we have Dawson Roof Park, who are one of our sponsors. We also have Rapiano's, who are one of our sponsors. Young Minds, which is a charity, they're getting involved as well. We also have Papyrus. They are an organisation which is focused on promoting or preventing suicide amongst young people. So these are all organisations that will be getting involved in Mental Health Awareness Week. There are lots of things going on during the week anyway. So it's just a matter of trying to collaborate with the mental health professionals, the organisations, the universities and the young people.
Tell me this. I wonder what the state of mental health is like in London at the moment. Is it something that is a growing concern, or are people just more free to speak up about things and we're hearing about it more?
Do you know what? I think it's probably a mixture of both. You can't really point out which direction it is. I think when it comes to mental health issues, because it has been a taboo for quite a long time, it's only recently that people are starting to talk more about it. So you could argue on one hand that as people are talking about it more, it's becoming more prominent. On the other side, you could also argue that people are becoming more aware of what mental health issues are and they're talking about it.
You are the founder of Inside Out. Can you tell us about what drove you to set up this wonderful organisation?
So there was quite a few things, actually. So I think it's all been based on my personal, professional and also academic experiences of mental health. So when I was 17, I had a close friend who was actually suffering from mental health issues, but at that time I wasn't educated about it. So even when it got to a point where they wanted to, or they even attempted to take their lives in front of me, I felt helpless at that time because I didn't know what to do. So that was one of the factors which drove me to realize that there's a lot of people who may be in the same position as me. And also I studied psychology, and I'm working towards becoming a clinical psychologist. So I've had quite a lot of work experience within the mental health field. And one of the things that I've noticed as well is that there's a lot of things in place for people once they have acquired a mental health issue, which is not a problem. But prior to that stage, in the preventative and early interventions, there isn't really much going on. So that's what Inside Out is focused on, providing that education. So if someone gets to the point where they face something that's life-threatening, then they can help themselves. Or even if they have a friend or family member, they have the knowledge to help other people as well.
London is a busy place and you're navigating its transport system while doing an interview with apparent ease. but it is a lot of stress. There's a lot of people. It's eyes down. It's walk fast. It's go where you need to go. What do people in London need to do to de-stress in this Mental Health Week?
I think the first thing I would say is make yourself a project. So as you just described, in London, people are always in a hurry. There's just, even life in general, there's just so much things that we put on our to-do list. So if you've got a family, you've got you've put your family on your to-do list, and you've got work, and then you've got your own personal things going on as well. So there's just so much to do. Most of the time we don't put ourselves on a to-do list. So making yourself a project and actually investing time and effort and energy into what you want to do and recalibrating. So like burnout tends to be quite common in London because everyone's always in a hurry, always doing things, but actually stopping. And even if it's just taking time out for, you know, a few hours in a day, or even if it's just 15 minutes every day, and resetting yourself and even reflecting on life and, you know, doing what you enjoy.
You've just given me an idea, and that is to take two or three things off my to-do list that aren't really important today and move them to next week. And I might try that as well. Tell us just briefly again the three events that are coming up that you have and where people can find out more details about them.
Brilliant. So we have two workshops and one event. So the first workshop is happening on Tuesday the 15th of May, and that is based on yoga. So it's a yoga and stress management workshop, and that's taking place in Brixton, which is in South London. And then we have the second day of our series, which is in Dorston. So with that event, we're focusing on music and mental health. So looking at music holistically, with different performances, got live bands, and also a panel discussion where mental health professionals and also musicians come together to discuss how we can help each other using music and finding practical solutions. And as I said, that's taking place on Dorston Roof Park. And then we have on the Sunday 20th, dance. So that is dance and mental health. So with that as well, we've got a dance duo called Home Bros, and they are an Afrobeat dance group. And what they're going to do is take us through some steps, and then that's going to be accompanied by a talk on stress management. So to find out more details, what you can do is log on to the website. It's www.insideoutorg.co.uk, and you can RSVP online, and all the information is there as well. And you can also follow us on all social media channels. So that's Inside Out UK.
Many thanks for your time, and I hope you get to where you're going stress-free and safe. Vanessa, founder of Inside Out in the UK, happy Mental Health Week UK from everybody here in Dublin, Ireland.
Thank you very much, and happy Mental Health Awareness Week to you too. Hope you have a great week.
And that's all we have got time for on the programme today. Join us next week at 12:30 for more of the same. If you want to get in touch, mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie is the email address. I'm Brian Green. Have a great week. Stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye.